This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U-Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan, and with me on the Breakfast Grill this morning are Noor Ashikin Shamshuri, Director of Yayasan Juwita, and also a member of Wanita AMNO, and also Ben Sufian, Program Director of Merdeka Centre. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having us. Yeah,
it's a very wet and somewhat cold Monday morning, but we'll try and keep this conversation pretty hot. In fact, if you want to be part of this conversation, you can tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We're looking at AMNO this morning because coming off that weekend with a very competitive race for the president of AMNO, won by Ahmad Zahid Hamidi. Question is, what do these results signal? I want to ask you, Noor, as a member of the party, and it's because of the party with a substantial history in terms of Malaysian politics, were you happy with the results?
First of all, I would like to thank BFM for inviting me today. And I would like to start with a disclaimer that the opinion that I have today is my own opinion through my observations and my experience working with Wanita AMNO. And I'm not representing AMNO per se. So when it comes to the question whether I'm happy or not about the result of the election or presidential elections yesterday, I'm quite neutral about it. But it's very obvious that the grassroots have spoken and they have chosen Yang Berhormat, Datuk Seri Ahmad Zahid Hamidi, to lead the party for the next 3 years. So doesn't mean that KJ is not good, or doesn't mean that YB Khairi is not a favorable candidate, or whether he's not good. But I would say that at this point, he is not a very grassroots person yet in comparison with Datuk Seri Zahid Hamidi. And I believe that there's a room for improvement for the next 3 years for him if he's interested to run for the next presidential elections, I think.
Ben, how do you see the results? Khairi had, I think, over 32,000 votes compared to Zahid's 39 or so thousand votes. And I think Kuli came in about 22,000 votes or so. What is it saying about this? Was this a very competitive race? Is the party, in fact, divided? We have a clear winner, but is the party divided? When you look at the numbers?
Well, thanks for having me, Sharad. I think, first of all, if you look at the results, it's a combination of people who want to see continuity in terms of having a strong leader lead the party, but also there is a very strong inclination for change, because if we see the results, Datuk Zahid's numbers, you know, did not reach 50% of the electoral college votes. He didn't even get 50% of the electoral college votes, and he also got less than 50% of the popular votes within the party. So there is a strong indication that grassroots members of the party wants change. But at the same time, I think you know how contests like this unfold, and I must say that this was a very competitive contest between the three gentlemen, and coming very close after the defeat in the election. The campaign was, I think, carried out very smoothly and quite civil compared to even previous party elections. And I think in this particular instance, members wanted, well, the results mean stability for the party, something that's familiar. Whether that is good or not, I think, is subject to discussion, you know, further on.
Shikin, I want to just ask you, you know, if this was a two-horse race instead of a three-horse race, if, as we had almost before the last minute, right, we just had Zahid Hamidi and Tunku Razali as contenders, do you think the results would have been different? Was the late entry of Khairi Jamaluddin a real spoiler for Kuli, and did it change the dynamics?
If you ask me on my personal opinion, even if there's only two of them between Tunku Razali and Datuk Seri Zahid Hamidi, I would say that it will not change that much. And Datuk Seri Zahid Hamidi still have the support from the grassroots. One of the reasons, this is my personal opinion, yeah? I, as a generation, the younger generation, haven't seen Kuli to be relevant in the recent current political climate. He I probably miss what he has been done in the past, but as a younger generation, millennials, I don't remember or what he has done is significant for me. And that alone, he was out in and out from the party as well for a while, and that he was not part of the party when we are facing the general elections. And I don't see that the result would be unfavorable on him if there's only two of them. And being KJ in, that is a tough fight, I think.
Okay, Ben, what do you make of the candidacy of Tunku Razali? Because a veteran UMNO leader, a man who in many ways did not dissent like Rafida Aziz and Tunda Emzin of the world, of UMNO rather. You know, he didn't dissent. Did you think it was curious that he was put up as the candidate to take on Zaid at that point in time?
Well, I think this particular campaign or party election is quite interesting because I think in the early stages we heard that there was not going to be contest for the top position. So there was a kind of managed transition from Najib to Zaid and then Hishamuddin Hussein. But I think in the last few weeks leading up to the party elections, Tengku Razali decides to throw his hat in the ring, and then Hishamuddin Hussein decided to pull out of the race, and then creating this Zahid versus Tengku Razali block. I mean, I quite agree with Shikin here that I think for many members inside UMNO, Tengku Razali is quite a figure of the past. He has come into this picture only recently in the wake of the defeat. And in many instances, prior to this, there has been, you know, always the rumor mill in KL that, oh, he's going to challenge the PM, not going to challenge the PM. So it's always back and forth, but, you know, nothing really forthcoming. That now he's decided to throw his hat in the ring. I think he had a chance, but I would say a fairly slim one. But that chance evaporated when Khairi entered the race. And I think when Khairi entered the race, I think it excited many younger members of the party who wanted to give it a shot and wanted a quick way for the party to reinvent its image and bring, you know, forth a new message to the public. But, you know, I think experience and also, you know, personality, I think in the end triumph because Dato' Zahid has been holding the party and been seen loyal to the party since its early days.
Yeah, Shikin, I want to talk about younger members of the party. We had the MP of Masjid Tana, former Putri chief, leave the party and now saying that she's going to be an independent in parliament. And she cited the lack of change she saw at the polls. She cited the lack of new faces. She seemed very disappointed. Do you expect that there will be others, MPs, UMNO MPs, who are going to respond like she has to these results?
I'm not sure about the MPs, but there are probably members or younger members that is not happy with the election. They are saying among my generations that they are quite disappointed because YB Khairi did not win 2 days ago. And that might signal lack of will to reform the party, and that might either leave or to join other party that they thought more progressive, or they don't want to be part of any party. There will be some people that is leaving, and some people for their own personal reason. But when you ask me about MP, I'm not sure about that.
Ben, what do you think? What do you make of this move by the MP for Masjid Tana? And also, of course, before her, two other MPs, mm-hmm. Bagan Sarai and Bukit Gantang, or MPs have also moved out. Do you think UMNO is going to be unstable in terms of its parliamentary representation?
I think we are going to see, you know, a dripping exodus of lawmakers from UMNO and perhaps even other parties to PH in the coming months. I think the reason is because it's much harder to operate as an opposition MP. And I think for an UMNO politician, it is even much harder because you are not only going to work with, you know, much reduced resources, but in many cases, you are, you know, through out and out an opposition politician in a rural constituency which needs attention and services. So I think for many, it's going to be a pragmatic case. I think the movement, however, is going to be managed in the sense that there's not going to be suddenly, like, you know, a whole rush of people making a beeline out of the door. But we are going to see this, I think, unfold in the coming months. And most people will be, you know, Pakatan, specifically PPBM friendly, because, you know, it's basically their friends on the other side as well.
Mm. Okay, I'm speaking to Nurul Ashikin Shamsuri, director of Yayasan Juwita, and also a member of Wanita UMNO, and Ben Sufian, program director of Merdeka Center. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning. If you just joined us, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Nurul Ashikin Shamsuri, director of Yayasan Juwita, also a member of Wanita UMNO, and Ben Sufian, program director at Merdeka Center polling organization. If you want to be part of this conversation, you can tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We'll come back to the question that Mr. Tan posed to us shortly. But I want to begin, Ben, with the question of the party. Do you think the party is moving in a single direction, or is it moving in many directions? I want to cite the election of a blogger, one Muhammad Azri, one Deres, or better known as Papa Gomo. He became a member of the UMNO Youth Exco. And many people saw this as the party lurching to the extreme right, basically becoming more nationalistic than been in the past, or engaging in the kind of politics they associate with Papa Gomo. Where is this party going?
Well, I think, firstly, you know, UMNO is not going to transform into a liberal, multicultural, multi-ethnic party in the way that PKR has been, or even a bit more right or slightly left of center, the way PPBM or Pribumi has become. It is definitely going to stay right of center. I think the challenge is how far to the right it will be, meaning how far deep is it going to harp on Malay, ethnic Malay nationalism as compared to maybe broader issues. The appointment of many of the leaders, I think, you know, there's a couple of things going on. Number one, I think many of the delegates, you know, were already pretty much determined before the general election. They were already there. And so they represented the different blocks of leadership as well as streams of thought in the party. So having this election done last weekend just meant that the people who were already there then got a chance to vote. So there's a great amount of, I would say, muscle memory, you know, like things that were already set, just maintaining its present momentum. So, yes, I think you do see that. You see Datuk Jamal Yunus, you know, re-elected fairly strongly as the Sungai Besar UMNO Division Chief recently as well. So you're going to see UMNO pretty much firmly planted in the right wing of our politics, right wing of the Malay politics. The big question mark is that can the leaders of the party now manage, moderate this stance so that it doesn't become too extreme and then start to occupy the fringes, you know? I think in the Malaysian context, political parties that want to have a successful career run need to be roughly in the centre. There are two centres, Malay Centre and the Malaysian Centre. UMNO needs to be in the Malaysian Centre space of the spectrum so that it's not in the fringes and it doesn't become like a weird party like PAS and so on had been in the past, decades ago.
Yeah, Shikin, I want to point to the to UMNO Youth as a wing. It's elected Ashraf Dusuki. He's now the new chief. He seemed to be somebody with some sort of Islamic credentials. Yeah. But they also have a Sharil Hamdan, who seems a much more kind of liberal wing of the party. And then you also have Papa Gomo. So, you know, where is it all going? And when you look at that lineup, what do you think? Do you think they'll be able to come to some kind of consensus?
Actually, when I see the result of the youth Pemuda UMNO, where they are elected Dr. Ashraf and also Shari Hamdan, and then there's Papa Gomo, and I'm a personal friend of Mr. Zaidil, and I was very surprised that he was not elected as well. And for me, it's a very interesting combination right now. I really don't understand why a certain people were elected. But from my personal point of view, for Dr. Ashraf, while he was perceived as a very Islamic person, I had a chance to interview him previously a couple of times, and he's actually pretty moderate. He's very progressive. He's an intellectual, and Sharil as well. And I think the combination of two intellectuals is very useful to move the youth forward, to get rid of the image that they have in the past, which is elitist. And they even thought that they have a gangsterism behavior in them and they are out of touch of reality. These two are pretty grounded, I believe, and they really tech-savvy and they understand the concern, and they had the impact. Both of them lost in the last general election as a candidate, so they understand what happened on the ground. So from this defeat experience and also from the input from by the public, I believe that I have faith for both Sharil and Dr. Ashraf to lead the UMNO youth.
You know, Ben, is this this problem that UMNO has is that it needs to speak both to its membership, but it also needs to speak to the larger nation. And I believe some sympathetic voices have said to them, they have to be acceptable to larger Malaysia if they want to return as a leading party. Can they do that?
Well, I think they can as soon as they get over the fact that they have lost, and that they have lost massively, and the landscape has changed, you know, significantly compared to before. So they need to realize that the operating model now is not like what it used to be 2 months ago. It is going to be a totally new Malaysia, but it also offers them new opportunity, like access to the media, like parties in the opposition never had to, but also greater scrutiny over how they conduct themselves. And I think in the immediate short to medium term, they are going to face tremendous pressure because of the ongoing or upcoming investigation and legal action with respect to the scandals and how it's linked to UMNO. So the party needs to mature very fast, and it needs to get over the transition period and begin to consolidate. So I would imagine that in the near term, it is going to stay focused in the Malay ground and fix what has gone wrong. But in the later stages, perhaps, you know, 3 years down the road, as it prepares for the general election, we hope that the party can then, you know, put forward a new agenda that can be acceptable to the broader group of Malaysians.
Yeah, she can, you know, at the televised debate between Cooley, KJ and Zayed, the only person who in some ways apologised for the conduct of UMNO in the last couple of years was Khairi Jamaluddin. He was the only one who apologised. Do you think there is a sense within the party that they didn't do anything wrong? They were, in fact, wronged by a lot of slander by the, you know, then federal opposition in Pakatan Harapan, that they were victims of, you know, fake news and such. Or do they actually accept that they might have been responsible, that UMNO is responsible for its own defeat?
Actually, if you ask me, I'm very big on apologising. I'm very big for UMNO to apologise to the people that have faith in them. And whether you ask me in UMNO, if they still feel they play the victim card, or they actually wanted to step up and say that we're sorry, this is what we have done. There are two sides of the people in two groups from what I observe. Some say that we should have be honest from the beginning, or some say that we are the victim of the fake news. I would say that at the current rate, at the declining of trust from the public, whether it's fake news or not, it's working. It's working against UMNO that that people just doesn't trust us anymore. And in order for you to bring back the trust of the people, in even if you learn on the crisis communication, the first thing you have to do is to apologize and bring and promise to be better. And that's what I think UMNO should do. We should be humbled by this experience, I think.
Okay, humbled. Let's see if UMNO is truly humbled by this experience. But there are options, right? And there's some political pragmatism. The current president believes that UMNO has a strong foothold, you know, hold on the Malay voting public. And also, the strategically, Ben, what is it that they think they might do? Because if you remember, Zayed also said that they might be able to come back to power before GE15. Is it all just bluster? Is it a way of keeping the troops together? Or are there ground realities that might actually make this a sensible claim?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, just to comment on the debate, I think there's something tactical going on there. Mm. I think, you know, going into the debate, I think some leaders did not apologize and did not distance themselves from the former party president because they were looking to get support from the delegates who were aligned to Najib. So by attacking Najib, you would then, you know, deprive yourself and of their votes and alienate those people. So I think that was a tactical move. But I think within the party, speaking to a few of its leaders, you know, there is acknowledgement that they messed up big time. They made mistakes in protecting leaders and basically denying the fact that the people wanted change and they didn't deliver it to them. I think in the short term, speeches about Pakatan imploding and all that, I think those are things beyond UMNO's control. I think what UMNO should be focused on is fixing itself and also bringing itself back to the middle. The reason is this. It is true that Pakatan won the last general election with just about a third of the Malay votes, but things can change. And in fact, the surveys that we and others have done shows that things are changing. The Malays are warming up to Pakatan. They have done quick wins by removing the GST and maintaining a petrol subsidy on board. So they've won new support, you know. And so if they can keep things together and deliver on some of the reforms, and more importantly, weather any possible future economic uncertainties, they would get the trust. And then UMNO is going to be out in the cold for a further term. So UMNO needs to bear that in mind.
Okay, so we have a minute before we get to the bulletin. Shikin, I want to ask you, would you be opposed to UMNO cooperating more seriously with PAS in the future?
If you ask me honestly, I'm not big on UMNO cooperating with PAS because it does not align with the way we are going. I don't want UMNO to be seen as more extreme, right? You know, so, but I could understand in order for you to win in elections, you have to gain the majority of the support, and the Malays are still the majority voters here, and to be aligned with PAS would be the smart thing to do if you want to keep winning, you want to win the election in the future. But if you ask me, I would say no. I'm not, I don't want UMNO to work together with PAS.
Very quickly, Ben, do you think any possibility of an UMNO-PAS tie-up?
I think it's a possibility because, you know, it's very clear looking at the results that non-Malays do not trust UMNO. It's going to be hard to get them to touch UMNO with a 10-foot pole in the near term. So it's going to push UMNO closer to PAS. And it's a kind of natural ally there on that part. And they just need to wait, have an electoral pact, and then they can come back.
Okay. I'm speaking to Nurul Ashikin Shamsuri, director of Yayasan Juwita and also Wanita UMNO member, and Ben Sufian, program director at Merdeka Center. We'll be back with a look at the future of Malay politics as well as Malaysian politics. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
BFM 89.9. Welcome back. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Nurul Ashikin Shamsuri, director of Yayasan Juwita, also a Wanita UMNO member, and Ben Sufian, program director with Merdeka Center. Remember, you can be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. We're talking about the future of UMNO. And of course, UMNO has been intimately tied to the coalitions that it anchored, first in the Alliance and then Barisan Nasional. Barisan Nasional having collapsed since May 9th. It went from some 14 parties now, I think, down to three or four, depending if you include MyPPP, which I think there's a bit of a wrangling there about whether they're in or out of the coalition. More importantly, the future of UMNO, if it wants to take the center stage again, needs to be, as you know, Ben, you suggested, needs to, as it were, govern from the middle or almost middle. And it has to do it in a coalition that includes all parts of this country. I'm not just talking about the Chinese, Indian, Malay configuration that we often talk about in the peninsula, but also Sabahans and Sarawakians. How do you bring them aboard today? What kind of message can UMNO give to those political parties now with a very strong agenda for autonomy going forward?
Well, I think first, you know, UMNO has to look after its own house. It has to do its cleaning up. And by doing so, I mean, it needs to, like what Shikin said, you know, bring back people's confidence in them. So I think in this particular party election, they couldn't do much because the list of candidates and all that had already much been preset. So what it needs to do in the next 3 years is to actually go over and start changing people and bring people of reputation and people of integrity into the party. Because at the end of the day, a political party is just the collection of individuals that make up its leadership. The leaders, the individuals are the party, that they carry the message of what a party embodies. So the next 3 years, they need to find new talent and bring these people on board. And they need to speak with moderation in terms of these issues that are important to them. If they can do that and at the same time take advantage and exploit the weaknesses of the ruling government now, particularly in the context of the Bumiputras and the rural electorate, then I think they have an opportunity to bring Sabah and Sarawak on board. We know that the Sarawakians and Sabahans are going to be pragmatic. They are going to go with the biggest winner in Peninsula. So now they are most probably going to be aligned to Pakatan. But in a future iteration, in the next general election, 5 years down the road, all of that is going to loosen up again. So we, our old model of having pre-election coalitions may no longer be there, that we may instead form coalitions after elections. So it forces party to moderate itself. So if one is too extreme in the onset, you may not have friends who want to partner up with you after the election.
You know, I was very interested, Jikin, in the what happened to UMNO and Barisan Nasional in Penang and Selangor. 10 years under Pakatan Rakyat then Pakatan Harapan. In Selangor in particular, you know, there was no leadership that emerged from the debacle of 10 years ago. Is that what's going to happen? UMNO going to find itself, having lost, completely unable to recoup as it did in Selangor. Selangor had no leader, no clear leader coming into this last elections.
Okay, so I wrote an article before. It's a rather emotional article about whether UMNO can re-emerge itself. And there are a lot of things that UMNO have to reform. They have to do complete transformations. Basically, they have to get away from... They have to recruit more smart people. You know, this is a culture in UMNO that I have to be super frank about, because the smart people are not appreciated in UMNO. And you have to bring... smart people with a quality leadership. You have to be more open. You have to get rid of the old political style, the feudal style. And then these people have to be able to voice out criticism, even towards the leaders.
Who is appreciated in UMNO today? If you say it's not the people that you just mentioned or with those characteristics, who's appreciated today?
If I can be completely frank, people that can butter up the leader, that is appreciated. You know, and this, I am in UMNO and I saw this. And people that is vocal on and a lot of opinion is not appreciated. They've been cut off from the green level. They wouldn't even win on a division level, for example. And this has to go. In order for you to be a strong party, you need to have smart people. Like Ben says, party is made up by individual that believe in the party and want to build the party. If you keep having the same people in the party, sitting in your echo chambers, and you don't want to progress, there will be no leadership. And UMNO will sink and go sink and sinker and go down, and it will not reform itself. So,
Ben, what do you make of the design of UMNO? UMNO, I think, initially designed on the British Labour Party model, because Tun Dr. Mahathir famously changed that. You know, now the party, do you think, and, you know, coming back to KJ's criticism of the election process and saying that it's designed to give warlords a bigger say, do you think that's true? Do you think there's something in the design that encourages them to kind of move towards what Shikin says is this cultural sycophancy and such?
Well, I think all parties, you know, that we look around in Malaysia as well as the rest of the world, you know, have a certain culture or sycophancy built in. I think, you know, UMNO has tried to change the election process from just having 2,000-3,000 delegates to now you have a bigger pool of people. And that's about as good as it can be. Other parties have a one-man, one-vote system, but that still doesn't allow them to escape the stranglehold of warlords. I think in any political contest, those people who have more resources, the wealthy ones, tend to have bigger say because they can spend and they can influence people and people look up to them. So, you know, I think that's just the world works. So I think in the current situation, you know, there's still room, because now that UMNO is in the opposition, there isn't political power that positions in government that people can fight for. So now I think people's own talents and capacities, you know, can shine if they choose to contribute to the party. And as the opposition, Pakatan, had been able to get into government, politicians inside UMNO can use social media and so on and still be able to win in the next election if they use it smartly.
Shikin, I'm going to give you the last word on this. Since you are an UMNO member, I want to ask you very simply, are you optimistic or are you pessimistic about the future of the party?
I would like to think that I'm optimistic. It's an interesting time to see how UMNO move forward without the status quo that they used to have. And I hope that UMNO members have to quickly reform themselves and stay together. And we could do this. Stick together. This is what I and the leaders should listen to the grassroots sentiment. And I hope that we could move forward as new UMNO.
Well, UMNO baru baru.
UMNO baru baru.
Okay. Thank you so much to both of you for joining us this morning.
Thanks.
I've been speaking to Nurul Ashikin Chamchuri, director of Yayasan Juwita, and Ben Sufian, program director at Merdeka Center. I'm Shoaib Khuddin, and this has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, Frost & Sullivan Malaysia's mobile data service provider of the year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.